Friday, everybody. Welcome to the Mike Cutler Hour. I am your host, Michael Cutler. It's always great catching up with you today, May 9th, 2014. And the weeks fly by, the months fly by. Here we are on the cusp of spring. The trees are blooming here in New York, and hopefully you've all had a great week out there wherever you are. Certainly lots to talk about, but to begin with, for those of you who are familiar with me, you know that I'm a retired INS senior special agent, a man on a mission, if you will. Ever since 9/11, I have been determined to provide my perspectives, my views, based on my experiences as an agent for 30 years. Spent half my career with the Drug Task Force here in New York. Immigration is a very important issue, and it's an important component of all of the issues confronting America and Americans today. And generally, that's what my focus is on this program. Not always. You know, I've had guests on who speak to other issues. But today, we're going to talk about immigration. And let me put two websites out there. First of all, my own personal website, michaelcutler.net, C-U-T-L-E-R, one word, michaelcutler.net. Also, very proud to tell you that I have been affiliated with a wonderful organization out in California by the name of Californians for Population Stabilization. Not a very sexy name, I got to admit, but I will tell you the work they do is extremely important. Their website, capsweb.org, C-A-P-S, capsweb.org. They have been hammering away at the impact of uncontrolled immigration, failures to enforce the immigration laws, and all those other issues that are all related to that same problem and the crisis that it has created for what has been called the Golden State. If you go to their website, and I strongly suggest that you do, you will see quite a few commentaries. I've do some writing for them. If you go to the blogs and click on that, you can look at all the articles that I and the other writers for CAPS have written. This week, there was a very interesting article because it strikes close to home. I'll get to that momentarily. But again, go to capsweb.org. In fact, do it after the show. Take a look. Check out the website. It's constantly evolving and changing. New articles being posted. There's a clip of a commercial that was run in California about how California has changed over the last several decades. Unfortunately, not for the better. You know, we've really got to be mindful about the decisions that we're making. America's future, our children's future, their children's future, all hang in the balance. And let me be very, very clear, because the other side, the folks that benefit by money, power, all sorts of things, by advocating for open borders, what I call immigration anarchy, are quick to say, well, those folks who want the laws enforced, they're anti-immigrant. Well, that's like saying that I hate my own family. My parents died when I was in college, but my mom came here as a 14-year-old girl ahead of the Holocaust, lived in a rooming house by herself, worked in an umbrella factory, for the incredible sum of $3 a week before the Depression. Had a fourth grade education, was still very successful in the United States because the opportunities were there. Hard work, talent, ability, and a little good old-fashioned luck could really help you write the next success story. Increasingly, the possibility of becoming successful in America is being diminished because every time we turn around, our politicians pandering to the people with the deep pockets who are paying them off, I mean giving them campaign contributions. I get confused with my terminology, folks, forgive me, are basically selling the country. I think we're at the point where we probably need a new position in the government and perhaps in your local government where you live as well and state government. They need to have the official auctioneer. For the right price, you too can get anything you want because in America, everything is for sale, or at least for rent. Absolutely astonishing. Bill Gates, Zuckerberg, all those folks in Silicon Valley, they tend to be lionized in the media. Oh, aren't they brilliant? John Stossel did a piece and said, oh, you know, those folks in Silicon Valley, they don't take a penny from anyone. They just make great products. And boy, oh boy, thank God they're there because they're wonderful. Maybe not so much, John Stossel. Maybe John Stossel can give us all a break. Zuckerberg and Gates lying through their teeth, claiming there's a shortage of high-tech workers, when the unemployment rate for high-tech workers stands at more than double what it is for all other average, so-called average American workers. There's no shortage of American programmers or engineers or scientists. There's a shortage, however, of American programmers, engineers, and scientists who will work for $40,000 a year. Therein lies the shortage. Therein lies the shortage. This is about importing labor for the cheapest possible prices so that they can make more money. And we all know that Bill Gates has a real problem putting food on his table, don't we? Go get him, Bill Gates. Go get him, Zuckerberg. Zuckerberg, who created something that he called the hackathon just a few months ago, where he would teach computer code to students so that they could be successful and make money and do whatever they wanted to do to get the American dream. There was only one qualification. They had to be illegal aliens. They had to be illegal aliens. You heard me right. So-called dreamers who came here allegedly as kids, but of course the age cutoff is 31. No interviews, no capacity to do field investigations, and certainly with this administration, no inclination to do field interviews. But you know what? It doesn't much matter, because after all, Zuckerberg decided that he needs to bring in cheap labor. This is the way to do it. Load the labor market up with tons and tons of workers, and you drive down the wages. Supply and demand is alive and well in Silicon Valley, and they have the money to buy, to contribute to the campaigns of the politicians who are delivering what they want, tons of cheap labor. And you know, Ted Cruz, good old Ted Cruz from Texas, he's answering that clarion call, because what most people don't realize is that Ted Cruz, everybody's buddy, wants to have a 500% increase in the number of H-1B visas. You heard that right. Last year, 65,000 such visas were issued. He wants 325,000 such visas and wants to double legal immigration, including family-based immigration. And you know, we don't let anybody into America. And if you believe that story, I have a bridge to sell you, or maybe a fence to sell you. Do you realize that last year the United States admitted more than 1 million lawful immigrants? More than 1 million. They were given green cards on the pathway to citizenship the day that they were handed their green card. More than 1 million, more than the rest of the world combined. And Cruz went before the U.S. Senate and offered amendments to what the Senate had concocted, that witch's brew known as comprehensive immigration reform, legislation that I refer to as the Terrorist Assistance and Facilitation Act. And there's Ted Cruz hammering away, saying, you know, comprehensive reform just didn't quite go far enough. Didn't go far enough. Didn't allow enough aliens to come here. That's the reason the system is broken. We need more aliens, and we need more sand at the beach, and we need more snow in a blizzard. And God only knows, when Hurricane Sandy hit New York, we needed more rain and more wind. Holy smoke. Look, I think that America was very much built by immigrants, my family members among them, people close to me among them, from every race, every religion, every ethnicity. This isn't about Latinos. The other side has made it about Latinos, and in the process, they've engaged in an insidious form of profiling, talking about this mythical Latino vote. And in the process, unfortunately, some Americans who are incapable of thinking, and there's a lot of them out there, folks. I mean, look who we elect to Congress. You know, every time the president does the State of the Union, in my mind's ear, instead of Hail to the Chief, I hear Calliope music playing. I can smell the popcorn, you know? It is a circus. It is a carnival. Really, it is. It's the theater of the absurd. Pardon me. My throat's going crazy along with me here tonight. Because I'm angry. I'm as angry as you could possibly imagine, because what's happening is that Americans are starting to believe that if your last name is Garcia or Rodriguez, you're probably an illegal alien, and nothing could be further from the truth. How many millions of Americans, American citizens, third, fourth, fifth generation Americans are Hispanic, served in the military, contributed mightily to this country? But if you listen to the open borders crowd, oh, this is about the Latino vote. And after all, every Latino wants our borders taken down. You should go down to Texas and meet the Tex-Mex folks whose relatives still live back in Mexico. They are scared to death about what's coming across that Mexican border. but it's not just the Mexican border. I think of that Mexican border the way that I think of that Calais deception during the Second World War. During the Second World War, we're going to give you a quick history lesson, so here we go. Everybody knows about D-Day. On D-Day, June 6, 1944, the Allied forces landed at the beaches of Normandy, stormed the beaches. The casualty count was unbelievable. The blood was spilling all over the place. Our soldiers were getting mowed down by machine gun fire, dying on the beach, losing limbs, getting crippled, all to protect this great republic and freedom throughout the world. Think of their sacrifices. Think what it took those young kids getting off those landing ships and running into raking machine gun fire to save America, to save democracy, to liberate the concentration camps, to bring freedom back to the world. But Eisenhower, brilliant leader, along with the other generals, realized that if our forces simply went up into Normandy the way they did, and if the Nazis were all there, they wouldn't have succeeded. So they needed to create a diversion. The diversion was the Calais deception. They convinced the Nazis, and they put quite a bit of effort into that deception, that we were going to come in through Calais. So the Germans didn't know where they were going to get hit. They knew it was coming. They didn't know when, and they weren't sure where. And part of this program of deception was to convince the Nazi war machine we were coming through Calais. And they took General George S. Patton, a man who was of a high profile, had a little bit of a big mouth, sometimes got himself into problems with it. I could relate to that. But he went out there and was given a phantom army. Just a few men. They created this fantasy army. They gave them basically props, inflatable tanks, inflatable trucks. My understanding is maybe even some inflatable airplanes. Parked them on the beach, convinced the Germans we were coming in through Norman, through Calais, and so they had to divide their forces. And meanwhile, while half their forces had gone to Calais, our guys landed on Omaha Beach, Normandy. Today, it's the Mexican deception. Now, there's a difference. Certainly, the threat from Mexico is very real. That Mexican border has to be secured. This isn't optional. That's not a fantasy. However, it's hardly the only place where aliens enter the United States. It's hardly the only place that poses a threat to our safety and security. Mexico is a unique place, though, because it's where the third world collides with the first world, that 2,000-plus mile border. And if you look at the violence in Mexico, if you look at the violence around the world, if you understand that right now in Latin America we have increasing numbers of Iranian shock troops, the Quds, arriving just about every week through Venezuela, direct flights from Tehran. There are terror training camps in the tri-border region of Brazil, where Brazil abuts with Argentina and Paraguay, members of Hamas, Hezbollah, likely Al-Qaeda. It's a problem. It's a very serious problem. So it's not a fantasy, but it's only one of many problems that we have to confront. But the Schumers of the world are trying to convince everybody and saying, hey, look, if we can secure the Mexican border, then it makes perfect sense to provide millions of illegal aliens who are present in the United States with lawful status. What could possibly go wrong? How in the world would it be wrong to take those folks and give them a pathway to citizenship? After all, we can't deport them all. You've heard that statement. I've heard that statement. We can't deport them all, so what are we supposed to do with them? Wow. By that reasoning, because we can't stop all speeders, we ought to be giving speeders new cars that are safer to drive at high speed. Maybe if you go really fast, we'll give you a Ferrari. Look, those laws exist and our borders exist for two primary purposes, folks. They exist to protect innocent lives, public safety, public health, and to protect the jobs of American workers, period. That's why we have immigration laws. There is nothing in those laws that address the issue of race, religion, ethnicity, nothing like that. It is a fantasy to think that that's what's in the law. The law basically says we're supposed to keep out aliens with dangerous communicable diseases. Ellis Island was a quarantine station. It was run by immigration in conjunction with public health. Now, I want to stop for a moment and remind you, if you haven't been reading it in the papers, there has been a problem with a resurgence of polio in the Middle East. There is a problem with a respiratory illness known as MERS. People are dying from MERS. People do die and suffer terribly because of polio. diseases that we thought we eradicated in the United States have come back because we have people coming into the United States illegally who've never been inoculated. It's not a statement of how decent these people are or not. It's a matter of reality. Many people live in abject poverty around the world and have never seen a doctor, have never been inoculated. So when they come to the United States, if they're harboring dangerous diseases, those diseases spread through our population. Remember when AIDS was first detected, they kept looking for patient zero. Everybody wanted to know how in the world did AIDS start and how in the world is it being transmitted. There are many dangerous diseases around the world. We should be concerned about who comes here, who carries the disease. Resistant tuberculosis, another very severe problem. It's estimated that at the rate we're going, because of the overuse of antibiotics, that there will come a time in the not-too-distant future when we may not be able to routinely do surgery for fear that the patient having surgery will develop an infection and die. Think what happened in the world before we developed antibiotics. If enough resistant diseases spring back as a resurgence because of overuse of antibiotics and because diseases are being transmitted by people traveling internationally, we could have a very serious problem across the world in terms of pandemics and so forth. Immigration is a part of that issue. In fact, when I started my career with the old INS, we had public health officers working with us on the lines as the passengers came in. We were required to make certain that if anybody came in showing obvious signs of illness, that we were supposed to flag public health. They would come and, if need be, take the person to the hospital. I remember one couple coming in with a child. It turned out it wasn't even their child. God only knows whose kid this was. They came in from the Caribbean. I remember it like yesterday. This kid was barely breathing. His eyes were encrusted. And when I checked his pulse, it was through the roof. I called public health. They took the kid by ambulance. He was in critical condition in the hospital. This was back in the 70s. I got a very nice letter from public health saying that this child had a very dangerous communicable disease and that it was vital that we took him to the hospital, A, to save his life, and B, because of concerns about the disease spreading. But when people sneak into the United States, no one's looking. No one knows if they're sick. No one knows if they're criminals. No one knows their identity. There's no record being made of their entry. Dangerous. We all have houses with locks on the door. Only a fool wouldn't lock his door. They give us peepholes and doorbells on our front door, so when a stranger seeks entry, they ring the bell, we look through the peephole, we make a decision whether it's safe to let the person in. Knock-knock jokes are universally accepted around the world because people understand that you don't just barge into somebody's house. You have to knock on the door or ring the bell and say, "May I come in?" And if they force their way in, it's called breaking and entering. Mayor Bloomberg in New York, when he was still the mayor, and I never thought I could say that I miss him, but when I look at de Blasio, I could almost miss him. Actually, I miss Ed Koch. He was my all-time favorite mayor. But Bloomberg stood there railing at numerous news conferences about the fact that the district attorney in New York was not prosecuting people who were trespassing into the public housing in the Bronx. And Bloomberg went out there, and he was railing and pounding the podium, and he said, "That's the way you bring back crime to New York. You let people get away with trespass, and you're going to have crime. You're going to have violence. You're going to have murder. You're going to have mayhem. People that trespass need to be arrested, need to be prosecuted, need to be put in jail, so we stop trespassing." I agree with him. But the problem with Mr. Bloomberg is that he lacked mouth-ear coordination. His own mouth was saying the words that his own ears weren't hearing, because people who trespassed on America, as far as he was concerned, should be given the key to the kingdom, certainly the key to the city. He continued the sanctuary policies of none other than Rudy Giuliani, America's mayor, who runs around saying, "I was the mayor on 9/11. Was he taking credit for 9/11? What is it? You know, if you ever stop and listen to some of the statements that some of the politicians make, you don't know if you want to laugh, cry, or throw up. How many times did we hear the politicians, starting with George W. and continuing with Obama, "We're fighting them over there so we don't have to fight them over here"? Really? We're fighting them over there so we don't have to fight them over here? Where in the world did the Trade Center come down? Where's the Pentagon? Where's Shanksville, Pennsylvania? And where were we strip-searching people just about to get on airplanes? Where was the NSA spying? Folks, This was all happening over here. But they have these great slogans, and Americans today accept slogans as though it's gospel truth. And after all, we all know that if you hear it on TV, it must be true, right? So you have Bloomberg screaming about trespassers when it's in public housing, but not when it's on America. You have a whole contingent of politicians taking campaign contributions, but of course, they're not being unduly influenced by money. As a federal agent, I couldn't take a cup of coffee or a glass of soda. If I came to your house because your neighbor was somebody I was interested in and I was looking for you to give me some information, if you offered me something to drink, all I was supposed to accept, in fact, all that I would accept, was a glass of ice water. The concern was that if agents take anything more than a glass of water, that people would somehow think that you were their buddy and they could expect the preferential treatment over a glass of soda or a cup of coffee. What happens when it's thousands of dollars in a campaign contribution? One of my friends at the FBI said, Mike, don't you understand? The politicians don't want competition. But boy, oh boy, are they providing we the people with competition. Are they ever? In fact, Jeff Sessions was quoted in The Blaze, and this is the great thing about the CAPS website, because they're always hunting through the news to find articles to help illustrate the point that we're trying to make. And just a couple of days ago, The Blaze had a story that was about what Senator Sessions had to say. And Senator Sessions, by the way, is one of my personal favorite senators who's out there. He quoted me from the floor of the United States Senate back in 07. I had testified before three House hearings and one Senate hearing about the issue of comprehensive immigration reform, and I decided that that terrible legislation needed a new and more descriptive name, so I came to refer to it as the Terrorist Assistance and Facilitation Act. And the reason that I gave it that name was because it would require giving millions of people identity documents without the ability to verify who in the world they are. Not only does this violate common sense, but it also violates the findings and recommendations of the 9/11 Commission. So I called it the Terrorist Assistance and Facilitation Act, and Senator Sessions went to the floor of the United States Senate and quoted me with attribution. He's that kind of guy. And so Sessions, I take my hat off to him. Now, I'm registered as a Democrat. These issues, by the way, I'm going to get to that momentarily, but these issues have nothing to do with being a Democrat or a Republican, but everything to do with being an American. Senator Sessions is a conservative Republican. Me? I'm pretty much a liberal, centrist to liberal Democrat. Yesterday, I spoke with a good friend, Lou Barletta, the congressman from Hazleton, Pennsylvania, previously the mayor of Hazleton, got sued because he enacted immigration laws in his community, the first mayor to take that unique action. And why did he do it? Because he went to the George Bush administration. See, it's both sides of the aisle that's been shafting us, boys and girls. And he said, you know, we have a Dominican drug gang that set up shop in my neighborhood. They've killed innocent people. They're dealing drugs in the park where the children are playing. It's a menace. We've had shootings. We've had murders. We've had robberies. We've had all kinds of crime. He said, my neighborhood hadn't had, or my community hadn't had a murder in I don't know how many years. And if you check, I did a great show with Lou. He's just fabulous to be with. We went down to Florida together to Embry-Riddle University several months ago, hosted by WNDB, Mark Bernier, who's the radio talk show host, flew me down to participate in this event with Lou. It was an 80-minute program. C-SPAN has it permanently posted. So anytime you like, you can go to C-SPAN. You could pull up that video and watch it. You could watch it in segments. I think you really should watch it. I think what Lou had to say was compelling. And he talked about how he went to Washington, went to the Justice Department, because back then immigration was under the Justice Department. He said, you got to help us. And the answer was, maybe not so much. And he, well, actually, it may have been under DHS by that point. I want to make sure I'm getting my facts exactly right. But he also went to DHS, as I recall. But they said, listen, we can't help you, but have a mug with a badge on it. So they gave him a very nice, fancy mug, and he went back to Pennsylvania, and he was given bupkis by the George W. Bush administration. Nothing. They wouldn't do anything. They wouldn't lift a finger to help him. Think how outrageous this is. You have criminal aliens selling narcotics in a playground, people being murdered. He goes to them and says, we have a problem with criminal aliens, and they said, have a mug. Are you serious? So when he enacted immigration legislation that largely paralleled federal immigration law, he got sued. I was his final witness at the trial. Again, Lou is a Republican. I'm a lifelong Democrat. This isn't about what party you're from. It's whether you stand with America or you don't. It's whether you stand with Americans or you don't. And again, we go back to why we have those laws. The laws are designed to, number one, keep out aliens with dangerous communicable diseases or aliens who suffer mental illness. Does anybody out there have a problem with the idea of keeping out people who pose that sort of public health or public safety threat? Next, we move along to aliens who've been previously deported, aliens who are fugitives from justice, aliens who are convicted criminals, bank robbers, rapists, murderers, arsonists, gun runners, gangbangers. It runs the gamut. Money launderers, I don't know if I said it. Then we're supposed to keep out spies, terrorists, human rights violators, and war criminals. So think about it. Of all those groups of individuals, who would you like living in that apartment or that house next door to you and your family? This is common sense. Yet when you say we have to enforce the law, oh my God, you're a nativist. Really? You mean to say you know people who would be happy if someone with a dangerous communicable disease moved in next door? You would be happy if you had a nut job next door who was trying to rape little girls or little boys? You would be happy if you had a member of organized crime moving into your neighborhood and he was involved with gun running and violent crime? Is that really what you'd like to have? Would you like to have a terrorist living next door to you? A transnational gang member from maybe the Mexican cartels? Would that make you happy? That's what the laws are primarily about. And then we get to aliens who would become a public charge and or take a job an American wants, because right in the law it talks about not bringing in foreign workers if in so doing they will compete unfairly with Americans, displace American workers, and or drive down the wages of Americans. That's what's in the law. Now, you tell me how unfair and bigoted you have to be to want those laws enforced. But the average American isn't paying attention. And then when they're told we can't use the word alien, and the media, supposedly the fourth estate, you know, they keep everybody in check. They're the ones that go out there and keep everyone on the level and inform the public. Oh, you can't use the word alien. Oh, it's hate speech. The term alien simply means any person not a citizen or national of the United States. It's right out of George Orwell's 1984 in Newspeak. And guess what? Nobody's reading 1984 in school anymore. You know why? I don't care what the calendar says, folks. This is 1984. And we do get Newspeak. We get it in the mainstream media, and we get it from the politicians every time they open their mouths, and I am firmly convinced that we all own lie detectors. It's a television set. You turn it on, and most times, if the politicians are speaking, you're being lied to, with a couple of notable exceptions. Jeff Sessions, Steve King, Lou Barletta. We can name them on the hand, maybe the fingers of maybe both of your hands out of 535 members of Congress. And I wouldn't give you the right time of day for what the administration is doing to us now. Not for us, but to us. I mean, this is the insanity. And yet, when you use the word alien in a public meeting, people kind of cringe. Oh, he said that word. Almost as though I said the N-word. And they say to them, well, what's so bad about the word alien? Oh, I don't know, but they say. Folks, how many times have you heard the word they say? And then I was on the phone just 2 days ago with this young lady. And by the way, I do speaking events all over the country. If you become aware of an opportunity to participate in a debate or a panel discussion, please let me know. You can reach me through michaelcutler.net. You can contact capsweb.org. They will certainly pass the message along. They're happy when I'm on the road informing the American people much as I can. But, you know, I had this conversation with this lady who's a staunch conservative, and she said to me, you know why you can't get the word out there, Mr. Cutler? Because those progressives, those Democrat Looney Tunes, they don't want you to be heard. I said, oh, and John Boehner wants Mike Cutler to be heard? Really? The guy that's talking about providing not citizenship, but lawful status to the people who are here illegally. Do you think he wants to have me go out there and say to the American people, wait a minute, folks, not so fast? It makes no sense to bring in more workers if Americans are out of work. It makes no sense that we keep hearing this BS about job creation when, believe it or not, right now, every month, we're bringing in more foreign workers than the number of new jobs that we're creating. And half the jobs that are being created are minimum wage jobs anyway. And they don't have an answer. And then one woman said to me, you know what's wrong? The schools aren't educating our children. Another staunch conservative. And I said, okay, maybe you're right. I was going to be a teacher way back when. Maybe they aren't doing the job that we would like them to do. So what are you doing about it? I thought conservatives always take the position, I don't want to live in a nanny state. Get the government off my back. Get the government out of my house. Get the government out of my life. Well, the schools aren't doing the job. If you're that independent a person, what are you doing to teach your children? Did you say to your kids, hey, I don't care if it's not in the school required reading list, I want you to read 1984. I'll be honest with you, folks. That's what I did with my kids. I said, I don't care what the school says. I'm your father. You're under my roof. Read 1984. And they did. That's what we have to do. But everybody is talking out of both sides of their mouth, and everybody is either lazy or stupid. Too lazy to find out the truth, too stupid to try to do their own research. So they listen to a slogan that gets spewed in a three-minute supposed news segment on one of the mainstream programs, and they think they're now educated. Absolutely astonishing. Absolutely astonishing. But I'll tell you who does get it, and it's Jeff Sessions. I can't tell you how honored I was that he quoted me from the floor of the Senate. Not that I need to hear my name thrown about, but it was that he was the one who did it. And I have nothing but the utmost respect to that senator from Alabama. I was on a Skype the other day with Florida. Boy, it's kind of weird to be sitting in your living room speaking with a couple of hundred people 1,200 miles away and get a standing ovation and watch it from your living room. Very remarkable. I've got more Skype programs coming up. Again, that's doable also. But I much prefer doing it live and in person because there's no substitution for being in front of a room of people and having an extended question and answer session and so forth. But, you know, they asked me who my dream team would be. Who would I want to see as president of the United States? And it didn't take me long to give them the answer that I think is the best answer. My dream team, ladies and gentlemen, would be Jeff Sessions as president and Lou Barletta as vice president. Could you imagine having leaders who actually stand for something, who actually look at the Constitution and look at this great nation and look at the American people and say, well, I was elected to represent those Americans. Who in the world is Chuckie Schumer representing? Who is Teddy representing, Teddy Cruz? And no, if I sound disrespectful, it's intentional. They don't earn my respect. My dad told me, may he rest in peace, he said, Mike, I don't want you to respect me because I'm your father. He said, when you get older, you're going to find out it's not very difficult to make babies. Not difficult at all, and you don't need a high IQ. He said, what's difficult is to be a decent parent. What's difficult is to raise children who have decent values. He said, so if you're going to respect me, it has to be because I earned the respect, not simply because I'm your father. And he was right. And when I think of Teddy Cruz, who shoved me when I politely approached him at an event where I had just got done speaking with Senator Sessions and Congressman Steve King, another gentleman who I have tons of respect for, I saw Cruz standing there talking about bringing in lots more workers. And when he came off the platform, I said, Senator, my name is Mike Cutler. He said, I know who you are. I handed him my card. I said, look, this is probably not the best time to have the conversation. I respectfully disagree with you about bringing in more foreign workers. I'd love an opportunity to speak with you or perhaps a senior member of your staff if such a meeting at some point could be arranged. You have my card. And he went from smiling at me when I initially said great speech and then said what I said, and he turned furious. And he got really nasty, and he said to me, there are people at that fence I need to speak to. You're in my way, and he gave me a good hard push. I kind of walked into his arm. I kept my hands at my sides because I'm not about to start duking it out with a United States senator. But I thought, what chutzpah, what gall. And people ran up to me, and they said, did we just see that guy push you? I said, yeah. And they couldn't believe it. But that's classless. But I guess that's what you get with most of these politicians like Teddy Cruz. So, you know, this is what we're up against. It's time that the American government lived up to that high and lofty ideal that was set by Abraham Lincoln in the Gettysburg Address when he spoke about America being a country of the people, by the people, and for the people. How are we doing that when every day you turn around and the administration refuses to enforce the immigration laws, when they find excuses to not only let people stay here but bring in more people? And now we go full circle back to something that was in the blaze on May 6th, CAPS thought that it was so significant, an article, that they posted it on their website, capsweb.org, and here's how it starts out. Senator Sessions, Republican from Alabama, on Tuesday blasted an Obama administration proposal to create up to 100,000 more guest worker permits for the spouses of foreign workers, calling it a plan that would keep 100,000 Americans from finding jobs. Quote, 50 million working-age Americans aren't working, said Sessions, an outspoken critic of Democratic immigration plans. Let me tell you, they may say Democrat, I'll tell you, it's both sides of the aisle. Speak to Teddy, he'll tell you. Yet the administration, quoting Sessions, is now going to immediately add almost 100,000 new guest workers to compete against unemployed Americans. It's good news for citizens in other countries who will be hired, he added, but for struggling Americans, it will only reduce wages, lower job opportunities, and make it harder to scrape by. Sessions was reacting to a Tuesday announcement from the Department of Homeland Security that it would extend employment authorization to spouses of some foreign workers in the United States, which could allow up to 100,000 more people to take jobs in the United States. DHS cast the plan as one that would help economic growth in the United States. Economic growth, where and how? No one ever asked. See, these are the questions that American people should be demanding damn answers to. Finally, he said, these steps will help the U.S. maintain, well, that's what they said, rather. These steps will help the U.S. maintain competitiveness with other countries in our efforts to attract the best and brightest high-skilled workers from around the world to support companies here at home, said DHS Deputy Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas. Businesses continue to need these high-skilled workers, and these rules ensure that we do not cede the upper hand to other countries competing for the same talent. Listen, this is a lot of baloney. Sessions said the announcement is the wrong move at a time when half of all college graduates are underemployed and one-third of black teens are unemployed. Statement from Sessions' office said that there are thousands of Americans who are qualified to take some of the high-skilled jobs now being held by foreign nationals. Who does the administration represent, Sessions asked. This is insanity, folks. Every week I turn on Fox and CNN. I won't even talk about MSNBC. It's not even worth talking about them. I used to be on those programs at MSNBC. I mean, they've fallen off the edge. I'm going to join the Flat Earth Society to see if we can find them if they fell off the edge. But the bottom line, they keep throwing those numbers, how many jobs were created. But nobody on either network is talking about how many foreign nationals are coming in and taking the jobs. Most new jobs go to people coming here from other countries. So what's the point? We have American workers running up a down escalator, and every week that escalator moves faster. And every week more people are falling below the poverty line. One in five American kids now goes to bed hungry at night, lives below the poverty line, and the administration says, hey, we've got the solution, more foreign workers. Could you imagine having a restaurant and you run out of food and someone says you got to do something and you say, sure, I'm going to go out there and drag some more patrons in. And what do you want to feed them, air? I mean, this is astonishing beyond words. And then we get to the national security implications of it. I know I've read this before, but I'm going to read it again. And I'm going to tell you what I told a member of Congress who is the chairman of a very important committee. I asked this guy, why is it that the 9/11 Commission report is never mentioned when you talk about immigration, even though we all know that immigration was a significant factor in the attacks of 9/11. So much so that even though the 9/11 Commission spent a fair amount of time discussing the immigration vulnerabilities, the 9/11 Commission staff said, you know what, they still didn't do enough to talk about immigration. So the 9/11 Commission staff issued a report, obviously enough, the name was called the 9/11 Commission Staff Report on Terrorist Travel, a monograph. And they focused on immigration completely in this report, and it was nearly as long as the 9/11 Commission report itself. So do you think that immigration played a role in 9/11? I asked this chairman of a committee in Washington at least four times in a 30-minute meeting that we had privately. You know, I wasn't trying to embarrass him. I was trying to wake him up. I wanted to grab him by the shoulders and say, are you in there? And I never got an answer to that question. The answer was the American people don't have the stomach to deport 11 million people. I said, the American people don't have a stomach for another 9/11, and by the way, why don't you ask me what I think? Look, I'm not saying we should go out and round up, and by the way, 11 million? Holy smoke, we're probably looking at 30 to 40 million. You know what that means? If you're walking in a big city like New York, probably every 10th person that you see is probably an alien who shouldn't be in the United States. How do you protect a country when you have that many foreign nationals in your country and at least half of them entered by sneaking in? Trespassed. Think of Bloomberg screaming about trespassing. Astonishing. But here is how the 9/11 Commission staff report on terrorist travel starts out, folks. This is in the preface, the very first words that you encounter when you open up the book. And by the way, it comes for the right price online. The price is free. My favorite price. I'm sure it's your favorite price. Here's how it starts. It is perhaps obvious that terrorists cannot plan and carry out attacks in the United States if they are unable to enter the country. Yet prior to September 11, while there were efforts to enhance border security, no agency of the U.S. government thought of border security as a tool in the counterterrorism arsenal. Indeed, even after 19 hijackers demonstrated the relative ease of obtaining a U.S. visa and gaining admission into the United States, border security still is not considered a cornerstone of national security policy. We believe, for reasons we discuss in the following pages, that it must be made one. Let me read to you two brief segments. I've read this in the past, but I can't say these things often enough to you, folks, because the media will not talk about the 9/11 Commission report. The media won't answer the questions as to how do you process applications when you can't even have the facilities to do a face-to-face interview. Forget about sending agents out to conduct any kind of a field investigation, because understand how this undermines national security. Again, this is page 47 of the 9/11 Commission staff report on terrorist travel. This isn't a comic book. It's not a supermarket tabloid. This is an official government report prepared at government expense the way they did after Space Shuttle Challenger and Space Shuttle Columbia were destroyed and lives were lost. That was the purpose for the report, to find out what went wrong and make damn sure we don't make the same mistakes again. My dad used to say there's no mistakes in life, only lessons if we learn from what goes wrong. But if we fail to act appropriately, it's unforgivable. Folks, this is unforgivable. It is unforgivable. Okay? When an airplane crashes, the FAA comes out, the NTSB comes out. Again, same purpose. Number one, to assign blame. Number two, to figure out what went wrong so it doesn't happen again. Of course, Hillary would say, what difference does it make? As an aside, by the way, I've been giving thought. I've been watching the Pistorius trial. You know, Oscar Pistorius, the Blade Runner, the guy who is alleged to have murdered his girlfriend in South Africa. I don't know why he doesn't use the Hillary defense. I mean, could you imagine if he stood up in court, turned to the judge, and said, Your Honor, what difference does it make? She's dead. I just had to throw that in because it's the way that the government of the United States operates with impunity. This is not a government of the people when you can make statements like that, folks. This isn't about being partisan. It's about being American. Let me read this little sentence from page 47. Once terrorists had entered the United States, their next challenge was to find a way to remain here. Their primary method was immigration fraud. Think of the Calais deception. They don't talk about fraud, folks. Just keep watching that Mexican border, okay? For example, Yusuf and Ajaj concocted bogus political asylum stories when they arrived in the United States. Mahmoud Abu Alima, involved in both the World Trade Center and landmark plots, received temporary residence under the Seasonal Agriculture Workers Program after falsely claiming he picked beans in Florida. If they knew he was lying and they didn't give him the card, if they had thrown him out, he couldn't have participated in the attack. We were asleep at the switch, as we were with the Boston case, because if you look at the Tsarnaev brothers, they claim political asylum, which means I have a credible fear that if I go home, terrible things will happen to me. We gave them lawful status because they couldn't go home. And as soon as they got lawful status, what did they do? They went home. Someone should have looked at that and said, they lied. Let's strip them of their asylum status, their political refugee status. We did bupkis, and they killed people, and they wounded people. And there was an awful lot of suffering because immigration failed to do its job. Page 98. Same report. 9/11 Commission staff report on terrorist travel. Terrorists in the 1990s, as well as the September 11 hijackers, needed to find a way to stay in or embed themselves in the United States if their operational plans were to come to fruition. As already discussed, this could be accomplished legally by marrying an American citizen, achieving temporary worker status. Think of the dreamers, folks. The age cutoff is 31. The average terrorist tends to be under age 30. What could possibly go wrong? But let me continue on. As already discussed, this could be accomplished legally by marrying an American citizen, achieving temporary worker status, or applying for asylum after entering. Think of Boston. Think of Cansey, the guy that shoots up the CIA, January 93, a month before the Trade Center bombing. Killed two CIA people, wounded three other CIA officers. He had applied for asylum. Ramzi Youssef applied for asylum, and you get to hear, you know, we hear this in all these reports, on and on. And then they said in this passage from the commission staff report, in many cases, the act of filing for an immigration benefit sufficed to permit the alien to remain in the country until the petition was adjudicated. Terrorists were free to conduct surveillance, coordinate operations, obtain and receive funding, go to school and learn English, make contacts in the United States, acquire necessary materials, and execute an attack. And yet, when I ask members of Congress, why in the world aren't you looking at the 9/11 Commission report? They tell me people don't want them deported. They tell me that people pray with them, and they don't want them to leave their church. The 9/11 Commission report is being intentionally ignored. Now, if this government was for real, and there was accountability and transparency and morality and decency, there'd be accountability. The only people who lost their jobs, folks, on 9/11 were the people who were obliterated. I did my very first congressional hearing on May 20th, 1997, roughly 4.5 years before the attacks of 9/11. That hearing was called because of the attacks of 93. It took us longer to call that hearing, this country to call that hearing, than it took us to win the Second World War, because the Democrats blocked the hearing, apparently. And then the Republicans got power, and they held the hearing, and they always hold hearings, but then they ignore the findings of their own damn hearings anyway. But I digress. I was called to that hearing to testify about the issue of visa fraud and immigration benefit fraud, because they understood that fraud was a threat to national security. When was the last time you heard anybody on Capitol Hill talk about immigration fraud or visa fraud and reference it back to national security to close the circle, to come back to the 9/11 Commission report? The answer is never. Because if the Clinton administration had paid attention to the hearing, had paid attention to what had become common knowledge, they would have understood that failures of the visa process, failures of the immigration system, enabled terrorists to enter the United States and kill people. But, of course, they ignore it. It's a non-issue. It's mind over matter. They don't mind, so it doesn't matter. It's astonishing. And yet, the band played on. No one is saying a word about the 9/11 Commission report. The journalists aren't willing to talk about it. They didn't even mention the 9/11 report when they talked about the Boston Marathon bombing. Astonishing. I did an interview with Megyn Kelly May 2nd of last year about that case. She gave me almost 8 minutes, which is an incredible length of time. Great interview, one of my favorites. But how rare is it to be able to talk about national security and immigration? Because that's not the narrative that corporations want. That's not the narrative that the Immigration Lawyers Association wants. That's not the narrative that the Chamber of Commerce wants. And in fact, the 9/11 Commission said, you know, the way you're giving out visas, they said it right in the preface, right? Border security and the visa process. The 9/11 Commission found that there was laxness in the way that visas were given to the terrorists. They said, you got to tighten up the visa process. You got to be careful who you're giving a visa to. They come into the country, there's a problem. I was over at Fox and Friends the week after bin Laden was taken out by our forces, by our brilliant soldiers. Huckabee was there, and we were in the green room. I said, Governor, how are you? He said, I'm fine. He said, I'm going to go out there, and we're going to hammer this. And he does this great segment on how there were men in the Middle East burning American flags, screaming death to America. And I was in the on-deck circle, so to speak. I was waiting by another camera. He was sitting on the old curvy couch. If you remember, they had that old dingy studio. Now it's really a show place. They did a beautiful job at that studio. And he's there, and they're having this conversation. And you know what the governor said? He said, you know something? We need to identify every one of those screaming fools in the Middle East. We need to get their names. We need to get their passport numbers. We need to make damn sure they never be allowed to set foot in the United States, ever. They are a threat to our safety. He was right. But he was also an advocate for comprehensive reform. So as he walked by me after he did that segment, and I'm thinking, go get him, governor, I was kind of stuck in my little chair there. I guess I'm in front of a camera, and I got my earpiece in, and the control room is telling me that we're 90 seconds out, so I'm certainly not going for any walks. I said, governor, come here for a minute. He said, what's up? I said, great point. I said, but I have a question. Are you that concerned that those people could come here and do harm to us? He said, this is the stuff of nightmares. I said, well, governor, you've been an advocate for comprehensive immigration reform. What if those people got to Mexico, burned their passports, and came across the border and lied about who they are? How in the world would we know who they are? And he just froze. He said, my God, I never thought of that. I said, look, this was my life's work. Think about it. I'd like to be on your show. Of course, I was never invited onto his show. We've had subsequent conversations. He must have 3 or 4 of my business cards. They won't talk about the issue in mainstream television. It defies understanding. He's not a dummy. He's a very educated, bright, worldly man. He understands. Why then won't we have an honest conversation about the threat posed by having people in our country whose true identities are unknown and unknowable? There is no satisfactory answer to this. There is no satisfactory answer. But Alan Greenspan, and again, I know I've gone over this before, but I'm so ticked off, folks, forgive me, but I'm going to try to get this up on my computer screen as we sit here. And I really want this to sink in. And if you find that what I'm saying is interesting to you, if you find it's got your motor running the way it has my motor running, please tell your friends and your neighbors about my program. They can listen to this show that I'm doing tonight, and I'm purposely doing it solo because I want to be able to spend the entire time that I have with you today talking about the issue. Because there's no other place you're going to hear this except here. That's why I try to get out and travel around the country, and I've been doing that. I just did a few events this week here on Long Island. I'll be doing some stuff in New Jersey. I may be heading back to South Carolina soon, possibly Texas. I'll go anywhere and everywhere. I feel like that old TV hero, Paladin, you know, his thing was have gun, we'll travel. For me, it's have mouth, we'll travel. But we really got to get our people educated and up to speed. And we've got to stop looking across the political aisle at our fellow Americans and vilifying people because this one's a Democrat and that one's a Republican and the other guy's a Tea Partier. At the end of the day, folks, we're all Americans, and I don't know any real American who wants to sign a suicide pact for himself, certainly not for his family. So please, get the word out there. This is a dangerous game that these politicians are playing, and it's our lives and our future and the future of our country and the future of our children that hang in the balance. But as that apocryphal statement was made in All the President's Men by Deep Throat, follow the money. So let's follow the money and let's consider what Alan Greenspan had to say when he testified for Chuck Schumer on April the 30th, 2009. And he recently did another news article with Gates, basically saying the same thing, talking about the fact that wages needed to be reduced. Wages needed to be reduced. I'll say it a third time. Wages need to be reduced. Really? Have you tried to buy a gallon of gasoline or a gallon of milk? But they're complaining that too much money is going to some Americans? And we're not talking about Gates or Greenberg, or Greenspan, rather, I assure you. Let me read this to you. Our skill shortage, and there is no skill shortage, it's a lie right from the get-go, but they have to create a fantasy. It's the Calais deception. Remember that, folks. Our skill shortage, I trust, will ultimately be resolved by reform of our primary and secondary education systems. But at best, that will take many years. An accelerated influx of highly skilled immigrants would bridge that gap and, moreover, carry with it two significant bonuses. Now, I want you to hear what he thinks bonuses are. First, skilled workers and their families form new households. They will, of necessity, move into vacant housing units, the current glut of which is depressing prices of American homes. And, of course, house price declines are a major factor in mortgage foreclosures and in the plunge in value of the vast quantity of U.S. mortgage-backed securities that has contributed substantially to the disabling of our banking system. What caused the disabling of the system were the subprime mortgages. 3 years earlier, he stood before the Fed as the director, bragging, touting subprime mortgages, how there were new ways of evaluating people who didn't establish a solid credit record. It was a lie. It was a scam. And the American people paid for the mistakes and the corruption of the banking system. So what did they learn? Bupkis. They knew they could do it to us again. And from what I'm reading, they're doing it again one way or the other. This is more than the fleecing of America. This is the destruction of America, the willful destruction of the middle class. Let me continue on, however. And by the way, don't you love the poetic way that he described American homes lost to foreclosure, vacant housing units. And when he says that by doing all this, you know, we'll be cranking out the engineers we need, we're doing it now. But who's going to want to study engineering and wind up with a student loan that looks like a mortgage payment when you can't get a job unless you're willing to work for $40,000 a year or some ridiculous and obscene figure? Because that's what it's about, and I can prove it, and here it comes. So if you take high blood pressure medicine, grab your pill bottle. Here it comes. The second bonus, that is to say, of providing these high-tech visas, would address the increasing concentration of income in this country. Somebody's making too much damn money. I wonder who it is. Hint, it's not Greenspan, and it's not his chum buddy there, Gates. Greatly expanding our quotas for the highly skilled will lower wage premiums of skilled over the lesser skilled. Folks, wage premium means salaries, paychecks. He goes on and says, skill shortages in America exist because we are shielding our skilled labor force from world competition. Quotas have been substituted for the wage pricing mechanism, and in the process, we have created a privileged elite whose incomes are being supported at non-competitively high levels by immigration quotas on skilled professionals. Eliminating such restrictions would reduce at least some of our income inequality. Wage premiums, privileged elite, what in the world is he talking about? This is about dropping the wages of American educated college grads through the floorboards, so there will be little distinction in wages between somebody who dropped out of high school and somebody who has a PhD. I thought that was called communism, and I thought the Soviet Union unraveled because it didn't work. So they're taking a failed system, trying to ram it down our throats. The news didn't cover this story. Nobody's covering the story, and the average American sits there picking his nose and playing his Xbox. We are in a very dangerous situation. Poverty is becoming the norm in America. We keep on bringing in more foreign workers who are displacing American workers. We are not only losing the edge, we're losing our minds. We're losing our minds. I did a speech a couple days ago. I'm going to interject a little bit of humor because I know that you're probably as worked up as I am. And it's a story about a guy who's not all that well endowed. I told the story when I was with Major General Paul Vallely of the Stand Up America Foundation. General Vallely's been a guest on my program a bunch of times. I hope to have him back. He's been one of the people leading the charge for this select committee on Benghazi. Thank God he has prevailed once again. He's a great leader. But I remember sitting there with him and a bunch of women in South Carolina at an Italian meal. And really remarkable. This young lady, Jeannie, who's trying to arrange me to do a Skype, was sitting next to me. She's from Savannah, Georgia. And so it was a fun kind of evening, and I wanted to have a little humor going because, you know, this stuff can really drive you crazy after a while. Believe me, I'm halfway there now. And they asked me about wage premiums and wage equality, because that's the new buzzword, wage equality. I said, be careful how we get to wage equality. And I said, it reminds me of this guy who isn't all that well endowed, and his girlfriend is always making fun of him, you know, saying, oh, my God, look at you. There's nothing much there. And the poor guy is so upset. He tries stuff that they advertise at 3 o'clock in the morning on those wacky infomercials. He goes to doctors to no avail, not helping. He's upset. So one day he says, I got to get my mind off of my shortcomings, and he goes to the beach. And he's out there with the metal detector, which is his hobby. That's what he does when he wants to relax. And lo and behold, he finds this lantern. Well, it looks pretty good. He figures he could sell it for a couple of bucks if he could clean it up. So he brings it back to his hotel room, and he starts polishing it. And the genie pops out, and the genie says, you get one wish. He said, one wish? I thought you guys give out 3 wishes. He said, no. He said, my deal is one wish. So whatever you wish for, it better be the most important thing in your world. He said, well, I know what's the most important thing in my world. I want the damn thing to drag on the floor. So the genie chops his legs off. Be careful what you wish for. Be careful how you achieve what it is you wish for. You know, wage equality may sound good to some people, but this is not about bringing people up but lowering people down. We have poverty in America in a way and to an extent that's unprecedented. 1 in 5 American children goes to bed hungry at night. 1 in 5 American families lives below the poverty line. This is a very dangerous situation. The national debt keeps growing, and meanwhile we can't seem to create enough jobs because we can't ever keep up with the pace of the influx of foreign workers. How in the world can this ultimately end well? It can't. It can't. It's overextending a credit card and mortgaging yourself up to your eyeballs and somehow thinking that that's a normal situation. We've got to be responsible in what we're doing as a country and as citizens. The Founding Fathers believed that the most important title of our government was that of citizen, government by the people. Most Americans are asleep at the switch. Ask them who their elected representative is, they will have no idea. Ask them who's winning Dancing with the Stars, and they will tell you immediately who's winning. This isn't good. Now, ignorance might be bliss. We may well have a lot of very happy Americans, but they will stop being happy when they lose their homes to foreclosure and can't put food on the table to feed their kids, or when they see their children come out of college with a degree and not be able to find work. That's the direction we're headed in, and we're picking up speed because no one's rating these characters in. I'm going to tell you a little story, and then I'm expecting that next week Don Rosenberg will be joining me. I hope he'll be able to. Don Rosenberg lost his son to that terrible accident in California, where he was run down by an illegal alien whose car was taken from him and given back to this guy, no license. He runs Don's son over. The kid was in law school driving a motorcycle. I believe I started talking about him earlier. He met with Jay Johnson, the head of DHS, an agency that so thoroughly screwed up, I call DHS the Department of Homeland Surrender. And Johnson's excuse to him, his excuse to Don, was to say, look, if the states don't want to enforce their laws, what can we do? We're the feds. We can't tell governors what to do. And Don relayed the story to me. I was on the phone with him yesterday, and Congressman Lou Barletta met with him on very short notice. But Lou Barletta is such a unique leader. I'm proud to be able to say that Lou is my friend. If I want to speak to him, and in fact I did yesterday, I was on the phone with Lou, I use the same cell phone number that his family uses. He is so accessible, it's amazing. He has not allowed his position in Congress to go to his head. He knows why he's in Washington. He knows who he represents. He understands duty. He understands integrity. He understands morality. He is amazing. But I was on the phone with Don because I had arranged a meeting between him and Lou, and we had this conversation, and I asked him, how did the meeting with Jay Johnson go? He says, well, he said to me, look, I wish I could help you, but when the states refuse to enforce the law, what can we do? And I said, do you realize, Don, that Holder, Eric Holder, the Attorney General, that day, darn it, I mean, talk about coincidence, came out and said, there are places where undocumented kids are being given a hard time about going to school. We will enforce that law 100%. If you dare try to keep an undocumented kid out of school, we will deal with you. We are the federal government. I said, so wait a minute. You have Jay Johnson, the head of DHS, Department of Homeland Surrender, telling you that, oh, well, if the states don't want to cooperate, that's all we can do. But the Attorney General says, well, the states don't cooperate, we're going to go after them. You can't have it both ways. What in the world are we listening to here? And I said, do you realize that aiding, abetting, encouraging, inducing, harboring, shielding, and transporting are felonies under the immigration laws? Are not sanctuary cities guilty of doing all the above? That's prosecutable crimes. But, of course, that prosecution has to be authorized by the Justice Department, and Eric Holder won't enforce those laws. But if you do anything to interfere with an illegal alien in this country, then you will get clobbered. Okay? It's remarkable. It's remarkable. It's lie after lie. It's BS story after BS story. And it's the American people sitting around going, well, what are you going to do about it? People are losing their lives and their livelihoods because our country won't secure the borders, won't enforce the immigration laws. It's not about racism. It's not about bigotry. The most likely victims of the crimes perpetrated by transnational criminals are the members of the ethnic immigrant communities of the same ethnicity. It's not just about Latin America. It's the Russian mob. It's Asian organized crime. It's the Jamaican drug posses. It's the African gangs. It's the European gangs. How do I know? Because in my 30 years with the INS, I arrested knuckleheads from all the above and then some. All the above and then some. I'm tired of the lies, folks. But I'll be honest, I'm also tired of our fellow Americans sitting on their big rear ends. You know, maybe it's not that they're drinking big gulp sodas. Maybe they're just sitting on their butts too damn much. We've got to wake our neighbors up. The fact that you listen to my program, I presume, means that you have a real interest in becoming educated. Presumably, you want to make things better, if not for yourself, then certainly for your kids and their children. And we need to get the politicians to understand that we're not as stupid as they hoped we were, as they were counting on us to be. They work for us, and we're lousy employers. We're letting them get away with highway robbery. If this was a company, in the manner of speaking it is, it would be bankrupt. Well, guess what? It is bankrupt. It is bankrupt. You look at the debt, it keeps growing. You look at our posture in the world, it keeps shriveling. This is not a good situation. It's a reversible situation, but it's going to take American citizens standing up and telling the politicians, hey, pal, you work for us. You work for us, and we've had it. If they worked for us on my job, they are guilty at the very least of insubordination. They are guilty of nonfeasance, misfeasance, and malfeasance. And yet they're never made to pay a price. That's why Hillary stood there waving her arms around like doing her helicopter impersonation. Remember her arms flailing around? My goodness, she looked like she... I was thinking of a paramecium with a flagella going. Huh, what difference does it make? They're dead. You know, it's remarkable. It's remarkable. And again, I think about Pistorius, the Blade Runner. Imagine if that was his legal defense. It's a preposterous statement to make, but not to the politicians, because nobody has ever said to a politician, you were in power, this is your responsibility, people died, we're making you accountable. If a doctor mistreats a patient and the patient dies or suffers paralysis or some other god-awful symptom, result, whatever, the doctor loses his license. The doctor gets sued. He loses his house. He loses his shirt. 9/11 was preventable if the Clinton administration had learned the lessons of the 93 terrorist attacks. They didn't, and nothing happened to them. But 3,000 people were killed, and there was just an announcement made that more police officers have now died of cancer related back to 9/11 when they were exposed to those toxins when the towers came down than were actually killed on 9/11. In a very real sense, ladies and gentlemen, the death toll from 9/11 is still running. They've not yet closed the books. Not only did those people die, they died terribly. Cancer is not the way to go. I mean, I don't know of too many ways to go, but boy, oh boy, having lost members of my family to cancer, I don't even want to think about it. And these were healthy police officers, healthy first responders, healthy New Yorkers. And of course, if you remember, the EPA told us the air was safe to breathe. Lie after lie, who was punished for doing that? Who was made accountable? If you did that on your job, folks, could you get away with it? Would you still have a job to go to on Monday morning? Of course not. But the way this country operates today, the bigger the whopper, the bigger the lie, the more acceptable it is. And of course, it emboldens the politicians. And it emboldens aspiring illegal aliens around the world. If you get one opportunity for a first impression, then it's the immigration laws that serve that first impression for millions of people from around the world, because those are the first laws they encounter when they come here or seek to come here. You know, we go to the movies, and some people, I don't, but some people, listen to the movie critics. If the movie critic says it's a good film, they run to see it. If the critic says it's a bad film, they don't go. They do the same thing with restaurants. Good restaurant, bad restaurant. In New York, the Board of Health comes out, and they put an A or a B on a restaurant about health, you know, about cleanliness. And people look at that because it's an evaluation. Well, don't you think when criminals come to the United States that they scope things out the way that criminals might scope out a place they're going to rob? You know, they're going to burglarize a house, or they're going to burglarize a factory off hours. Well, where's the security guard, and how long does it take them to get around the building, and how many cameras are there, and where are the lights, and where are the alarms, and, you know, they scope it out. You don't think that people come here from other countries seeking to commit crimes, and they want to commit those crimes, so they look around, how easy, how do we get in, and so forth? The terrorists did that, and the lesson was clear. Immigration wasn't a problem. Increasingly, immigration is less of a problem for them today than it has ever been. We're being left vulnerable, even as our expectations of privacy that were supposed to be guaranteed under the Fourth Amendment have been shredded. Two analogies, and I'm going to wrap things up. It is Friday evening. I was talking to Congressman Barletta last night, and I said, Lou, there's an image that comes to my mind. And the image is the New Jersey Turnpike, because I frequently am on that turnpike, especially when I head to Washington. And you have two sets of lanes. You can either go to the cash lane where they give you a card on the turnpike, and then at the end you go to another guy and they tell you how much you have to pay based on how many miles you drove, based on what exit you got on or what exit you got off. Or you can go into an express lane that's purely for easy pass, and you don't even have to slow down by much. You can, I think, cruise through there at 55 miles an hour as opposed to stopping and waiting online to pay cash. So you have two lanes on the Jersey Turnpike as far as paying goes. And I said to Lou, imagine if there was a third line on the Jersey Turnpike. You have the cash lane where you go in, you get a card, then you have to pay. You have the Easy Pass Express lane where you could zip on through at 55 miles an hour. Well, now, folks, let's imagine the third lane says no speed limit, free. You don't have to pay, and you don't have to worry about how fast you're going. Who in their right mind would go to the other two lanes. In fact, I could make an argument that anybody who would take the lanes that cost money is mentally deficient. I would make an argument that if we don't care how you come here, then any alien dumb enough to get a visa is a jerk, and we should probably keep them out because they're mental defectives. Right or wrong? What sane person is going to go through a rigmarole when you have the president and Joe Biden, America's answer to the court jester, running around and saying, we don't care you got here. You earned the right to be here. Holy smoke, you can't make this up. You earned the right to be here by violating our borders that are supposed to protect us? Then why are we spending money on immigration inspectors, CBP inspectors? We spent billions of dollars on the Border Patrol. We spent billions of dollars on the inspections process. But it all seems pretty unnecessary when you have an administration that says, hey, if you run the border, it's fine with us. And they use the term undocumented, which of course means they either don't have or don't want to show you their official documents that really identify them. Again, bad guys always conceal their identities. What does that tell you? But even beyond that, when I was an immigration agent and an alien ran the border, the term we used was EWI, entry without inspection. You know, go back to this concept of the passengers that go to the airport. Nobody would get on an airplane if they saw people sneaking past the TSA people and got on the airplane without being checked. I wouldn't get on the airplane. You wouldn't get on the airplane. So why in the world are we being forced to live with millions of foreign nationals who did just that, snuck around the inspections process? Makes no sense, but this is what our government is doing. And when we say, wait a minute, this is wrong, they try to label us, and most Americans have become so afraid of being labeled, it's like the school bully that says, you're a chicken if you don't jump off the roof. And how many kids have broken arms and legs jumping off of things because someone said, you're a chicken? The chicken is the guy that jumps because he's afraid of being considered a chicken. The guy that's a cat is the hero is the guy that looks the guy in the face and says, you're out of your mind, you go jump, and jump higher yet. So understand how screwy the whole situation is. Don Rosenberg, as I started telling you, is going to try to be my guest next week. I believe he's going to be free. He believes he's going to be free. I hope he is, because certainly he has an important story to tell. By the way, just so you know, I recently wrote an article for The Social Contract about what's really needed to enforce the immigration laws. I think you would find it really worthwhile. The title of my article, this is one of a whole string that I've done for them, Compiling Honest Solutions to the Immigration Crisis. And believe me, it is a crisis. So if you go to the Social Contract website, it's thesocialcontract.com. Also, you could watch that Skype interview that I did with the folks in Florida at the Villages, with an S, one word, thevillagesteaparty.org, the Villages Tea Party, and you could watch the Skype appearance that I made at the meeting of the Tea Party in the Villages in Florida. Very exciting opportunity to speak with these folks. I hope to be down there live and in person, because there really is no substitute for being on stage in front of folks. But if you want to see the video, it's at thevillagesteaparty.org. I hope that these programs are helpful to all of you, to provide you with the perspectives that you're not hearing anyplace else, folks. We either get this business under control, or it will get us under control. That's really what I fear. I want to thank all of you, as I always do, for spending Friday afternoon with me. It's always a privilege to be with you. Please go to my website, michaelcutler.net. Go to capsweb.org, my friends out there in Santa Barbara, California. Great folks, great people. That website is really a good resource. It will provide you with ongoing information as stuff develops, so that you will be kept up to speed on the impact of immigration. And forget that it says, you know, California. Because what's happening there is happening around the country. They deal with urban sprawl. They deal with the fact that they're running out of water. They deal with the fact that there are no jobs. It's a very important website, look at the article that they found that was originally published in The Blaze, talking about Senator Sessions, my hero in Washington. So good website, capsweb.org. Go to michaelcutler.net. And again, folks, if you become aware of opportunities for me to get my perspectives out there, certainly would love to do it. Love to come to your neck of the woods and provide the insight that you're not likely to get anyplace else. You know, I always like to remind people, democracy is not a spectator sport. Please take this information and get your politicians to listen to you. I can assure you they're lonely, and they just want to hear from you in the worst way possible. Please do what you can, folks. We really have got to shake up our supposed elected leaders and remind them who they work for. Great meeting with you again this evening, folks. Have a good weekend. Boy, I can't get the words out. We'll see you next week, same time, and presumably my good friend Don Rosenberg will be my guest. Good night, everybody.